For the next couple hours, we're going to be talking about the ages of the giants, a cultural history of the tall ones in prehistoric America. Jason Jarrell will join us, and we'll be back with him and talk about these giants in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Jason Jarrell with us, an investigative historian, archaeologist, public speaker, and other than ancient history, his studies include philosophy, comparative mythology, religion, depth psychology, and he's a frequent guest on numerous shows, radio shows, podcasting, focused on ancient history, cultural studies, also has appeared on Ancient Aliens, our television series. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, George. It's a real pleasure and an honor to be here.
I'm looking forward to this. How did you get involved in studying ancient giants?
Well, I've always been interested in the Bible, mythology, and other subjects that are sort of related. And many years ago, I discovered some articles written by Ross Hamilton that clearly demonstrated that the tall ones could be found in the actual archaeological record and not just in hundreds of old press accounts. So that got my attention. And then after moving to West Virginia about 10 years ago, my wife Sarah and I learned that we were living on top of the former location of an ancient stone mound, which was surveyed by the Smithsonian in 1883. And so we started looking into the mound builders, and we realized very quickly that the large skeletal remains were not only very real, but that they had been found and acknowledged by antiquarians and archaeologists between the late 1800s all the way up to about 1970. And so once we knew that there was a very real mystery underlying all of the subjects, we decided to launch our own investigation and find out what we could learn about the people behind the myth, so to speak. And one aspect of our project required around 4 years of study of archaeology to learn the cultural history of North America going back many thousands of years, basically so that we would be able to learn more about how old these people were, how they lived, mm-hmm. and which cultures they were a part of.
And you keyed in on North America, even though the giants are worldwide, right?
Well, our project actually includes the entire world.
Does it? Okay.
It's just that we're publishing the results of our research in increments because we've come to the conclusion that many of these cultures are actually unrelated. So this is a phenomenon that seems to appear in many different segments of the human gene pool in the ancient past.
When we talk about giants, Jason, what are we talking about? How tall?
Well, we refer to these people as the North American giants, mainly because that is the term by which most readers and listeners recognize the topic. But this is probably not a completely accurate term for these people. The great Native American scholar Vine Deloria Jr. published a book called Red Earth, White Lies in 1995, in which he described his conversations with tribal elders in the U.S. regarding these ancients. And the tribal elders consistently referred to them as the tall ones. And I believe this is a more suitable term for what we have learned concerning their anthropology. The tall ones represent a distinct but integrated segment of the prehistoric population in North America. They were living among the rest of the ancient Americans for thousands of years, and the traits which made them unique were their very large stature, thick, large skull vaults, and pronounced facial features, massive and powerful lower jaw bones, and extremely powerful builds. Many archaeologists who've studied their skeletons have written about the evidence of a powerful muscular system that are observable in the skeletal remains. Now, concerning the height, Most of the reliable reports that we have found are describing people between 7 and 8 feet in height,
Okay.
with a lesser number of reliable reports giving heights of between 8 and 9 feet. Another fact that needs to be emphasized is that this was not a particular race or species of giants. The tall ones universally represent members of populations who were generally of average stature.
Now, these giants that we're talking about, biblically speaking, are they the Nephilim?
Well, there are people who believe that, and I do believe that there are giants from the ancient world who are the Nephilim, because I am a biblical believer. However, it is not my opinion that the North American giants are the Nephilim.
Ah.
Now, that being said, I do respect other people's right to form their own opinion, because
sure,
that's what this is all about.
What happened to the giants, Jason? I mean, where'd they go?
Well, that's a very important question. One of the things that people need to realize when we study ancient cultures in North America is that with the arrival of Europeans, disease and slavery and several other aspects of the things that happened when Europeans colonized North America actually wiped out somewhere between 60 and 70% of the ancient lineages.
Jeez.
Of Native American people. So many of them were probably a part of lineages that are now extinct, but which were encountered by early European explorers. Aside from that, what may surprise a lot of people to learn is that the tall ones actually persisted into the 20th century, and there are just as many press accounts and anthropology studies of living descendants of these people as there are of the ancient skeletons. And one of my favorite examples of that is a gentleman named Max Palmer, who was born in 1927. Max was of part Cherokee ancestry, and he was actually in several science fiction films in the 1950s, including Invaders from Mars. Max stood 8 feet 2 inches tall.
Jeez.
And the doctors knew from studying him that he did not suffer from giantism. He had an incredibly athletic build. In fact, he was a professional wrestler who called himself Paul Bunyan in the ring. And in 1963, Max became a born-again Christian. He called himself Goliath for Christ, and he preached the gospel until his death in 1984. But being of Cherokee ancestry connects Max to several ancient cultures that the remains of the tall ones have been found in their tombs, including the proto-historic Iroquois, the Susquehanna, and the Conestee Hopewell mound builders of the South. And that's just one example. There are many hundreds of examples of living Native Americans who still possessed this unique anthropology well into modern times.
These giants that died off, what do you think the population size could have been? Are we dealing with hundreds or thousands? What do you think?
Well, that's another important question. I can refer you to the works of several mainstream archaeologists who acknowledge the tall ones, including William S. Webb and Don Dragoo. They were writing in the 1950s and the 1960s. We know that there were enough of them that this is not something that can be explained as several people have tried to do in modern times, you know, as just occasionally tall people. But we also know that due to the widespread practice of cremation in these ancient cultures, we really have no way of knowing how many people possess these features, because cremation was a very prevalent burial practice between about 4000 BC and 1000 AD in North America. But the archaeologists I mentioned, along with several physical anthropologists, have found evidence in the bones that have been recovered from cremations to suggest that many people in the cremation burials were also of this unique physical type.
In your research, did you stumble across anything that you would say was just so compelling that you put it in your book, Ages of the Giants?
Well, certainly the most compelling aspect of our work really comes down to the credentialed sources. That is, the sources for the discovery of these remains that come from actual archaeological reports. And what I can do is walk you and the audience through several of the professional reports.
Okay.
So in 1883 and 1884, Colonel Norris of the Bureau of Ethnology of the Smithsonian investigated 50 Adena burial mounds at Charleston, West Virginia. And his report that he filed with the Smithsonian actually mentions the discovery of several skeletons he measured of very large proportions. And one of these came from the Great Smith Mound, which was number 21 of the Charleston group. And the Smith Mound was around 35 feet high. And within the mound, Norris discovered a large timber house-like structure. And this structure was 13 feet long and 12 feet wide, reaching as high as 9 feet with a sloping roof. And he found 6 burials in the structure. And this that I'll read now is an exact quote from Norris's own field manuscript. "At 19 feet in the bottom of this debris, we find together with the fragments of a rotten bark coffin, a gigantic human skeleton 7 feet 6 inches in length." So one of the interesting things about this discovery is that it was mentioned in the November 20th, 1883 edition of the New York Times. But the New York Times mentioned the skeleton as being only 7 feet in length. So you'll notice that in this instance, not only is the large skeleton reported by the press confirmed in an official archaeological report, but the press mistakenly recorded the length of the skeleton as 5 or 6 inches shorter than it actually was. And Norris found several other skeletons in Charleston, published in his report, as 7 feet long. Another really interesting account comes from Ohio. And this was roughly contemporaneous with the digs of the Smithsonian. On May 31st, 1897, the Daily Public Ledger reported the following discovery. 10 skeletons were found in 2 mounds by Dr. Loveberry, curator of the Ohio State University Museum, one that of a giant fully 8 feet tall. So it turns out that Clarence Loveberry did excavate 2 mounds on the Briggs Farm in Union Township near Chillicothe in May of 1897.
Jeez.
And the following passage is taken from his official report. This is Loveberry. He says, "In the central part of the structure, we found a 4th skeleton. The bones were the largest I ever removed from a mound. All joints were exceedingly massive, and the muscular attachments were wonderfully developed." So there are numerous accounts like this throughout the 1800s and 1900s, which in many instances corroborate and confirm the press reports that so many of us have seen.
Jason, have you heard that the Smithsonian has many of these skeletons and they keep it quiet?
Well, I have heard that. I do not believe that the remains of the Tall Ones are still in the possession of the Smithsonian, but considering that there are thousands of skeletons still scattered in the Smithsonian vaults, it wouldn't surprise me if some of them were there just as a matter of circumstance. There are several locations in North America where we believe the remains are being kept of several of these skeletons, but none of those are directly affiliated with the National Museum.
Now, in terms of the tall ones, were they particularly, did they have any special powers during their moment? I mean, were they like, leaders and kings or anything like that?
So that really depends on the time period. Our first research project covers about 4,000 years in North America, and we have analyzed the social structure and material culture of four major prehistoric cultures that had these people among them, and each one is different. But the culture that's probably the most important in this respect is the Adena Mound Builder culture, which dates to between 1000 BC and 300 AD here in the Ohio Valley. And what we know from research into their social structure, it seems that these people actually lived under a heterarchy. And in a heterarchical society, people rise to the occasion to fulfill social roles, such as the leader of the hunt or the shaman, basically on a situational basis. And then after, the chore or the task is finished, they don't typically exercise power over the rest of the population. So at least in the context of the mound builder culture, it doesn't seem that these individuals had any type of hereditary power. We see some of the remains of the Tall Ones, such as a large skeleton found at the Cresap Mound here in West Virginia, which are found with lots of exotic and prestigious artifacts, which could indicate a type of high status. But on the other hand, we have instances from Kentucky of the same culture burying gigantic skeletons with no artifacts, which would seem to indicate that that individual didn't hold much of an important social position.
It is truly remarkable that they would be all over the world and then simply die off or vanish. Could they have been extraterrestrial, or do you think they were human types?
Well, having studied numerous anthropological papers that have photographs of these remains, I would refer people to a couple of excavation reports from here in the U.S. One is the Dover Mound by William S. Webb, and another is Mounds for the Dead by Don Dragoo. These people seem, to me at least, to be human beings. They lived and died as human beings. Their diets seem to have been the same as those of what we would consider normal human beings. Sometimes we see mounds where a very large skeleton is buried with a member of the opposite sex and a child, which archaeologists feel could represent a family crypt
Hold on
between
for a
those.
second, Jason. Let's come back and talk more about the giants. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Jason Jarrell with us, his book Ages of the Giants. Jason, we were talking about the compelling aspects of this. In your research, did you come across any interesting incidents that would baffle us?
Well, we actually have come across a lot of instances of grave robbing.
Really?
Yes, there's, for example, and this is just one of numerous examples, there was a burial mound here in West Virginia that was excavated in 1929, And the excavator discovered two large skeletons. One was around 7.5 feet long, and the other one was considerably larger. We're not sure how large, but there have been estimates as large as 9 feet. And the larger skeleton was actually stolen by an assistant to the excavations who took it home. And we've actually seen personal correspondence in the form of letters, which prove that the larger skeleton was actually stolen again from the home of the person who took it from the site.
Jeez.
An interesting note with this case is that the same mound was excavated again in 1960, and yet another assistant to the excavations stole another large skeleton, and that individual, upon his death, illegally sold those large remains on the black market to a wealthy elite buyer.
How much do you think that would the bones would go for?
Well, I'm not sure, but I find it very disturbing that, in a time that close to us today, that people were that ambitious about collecting unusual
Oh,
skeletons.
they'll buy anything, Jason.
Apparently they will. Money
Yeah.
talks, as they say.
Yep.
Compared to that, George, I would point out that on the other end of the spectrum, for example, I was doing a conference in Ohio a couple years ago, and a retired archaeologist approached me, and he introduced himself, and he says, I was there in the 1960s when the Ohio Historical Society found one of these large skeletons in a mound in Ohio. And I asked him what happened to the bones, and he told me that the lead archaeologist had merely thrown them in the trash.
Jeez.
So really, they've been, in some instances, they've been considered highly valuable. In other instances, they've just been discarded.
Is it possible that the tall ones are being confused with Bigfoot nowadays?
Well, I think that when we look at things like Bigfoot, it's important to remember that the Native American people seem to be describing something which interacts with the human realm, but which does not always live in human culture. The tall ones, on the other hand, were parts of human societies for millennia. These were people, they lived among people. So I believe that there's certainly a distinction there between the North American giants and the mythic concepts like the Wendigo and the Bigfoot.
Cahokia Mounds near St. Louis has a huge mound. Is it conceivable that some of the tall ones are buried there?
It's highly conceivable. The entire St. Louis area used to be the home of around 100 burial mounds. As the area was developed over time, numerous large skeletons were found in some of the larger mounds, some of them 7 or 8 feet tall. And Cahokia, as a Mississippian site, the Mississippian culture dates between roughly 900 AD and around 1600 AD. Some archaeologists believe that Cahokia may have been founded by a group that migrated from out of the Ohio Valley, which is actually the location of older cultures which had hundreds of large skeletons in their tombs.
And Jason, we were talking before the break about the possibility that these tall ones could be of extraterrestrial origin, and then the break got us. Let's talk a little bit more about that.
Okay, well, in my opinion, the tall ones around the world, because if we're going to compare these with other large skeletons from other areas, it's important to point out that even in Europe, for instance, the tall ones in Europe are found in copper, bronze, and Iron Age tombs. And in the East, they're found in contemporary tombs for Amorite cultures from the Middle Bronze Age. So we see them scattered throughout the world, and I would like to point out that the DNA tests that have been done on all these peoples clearly show us that they are not closely biologically related with recent ancestors. So if there is a common X factor which has influenced the genes of all these people, it must be tens of thousands of years old. So to answer a question like that, we would need to go back even further in time, I think, in the study of this phenomenon than has been done before.
Now, the story of David and Goliath, he was one of them, wasn't he?
Well, I've seen estimates for the height of Goliath that range from 8.5 feet to over 9 feet. Certainly, we have remains that have been found in North America of a comparable size to Goliath. It's also important to point out that when we look at the biblical giants, these people were warriors and kings. Clearly, this was not a case of giantism. And that's another feature of the anthropology that we see of the tall ones in the record, is that these were people with athletic builds of good health. So Goliath would be very similar in features to some of the tall ones that archaeologists have exhumed.
In terms of investigating, is anybody conducting archaeological digs for these bodies and these skeletons?
Well, archaeologists in the 20th century were still recovering these skeletons and writing about them in their reports. I mentioned William S. Webb and Don Dragoo before the break. There are always digs being done in the mounds of these cultures. The graves of the ancients in North America are an ongoing subject of intense archaeological research. One of the things that I would like people to know is that there are numerous methods for measuring skeletons when they're found in the tombs. And regression formulas can allow for an archaeologist to give a measurement of a skeleton that's as much as a foot shorter than what it actually is. So with that kind of practice available, it's difficult to say how many of them are or are not being found today.
What baffles you the most about your work, Jason? I mean, if there was something that you could solve and fix, what would that be?
Well, I believe, as I stated before, it is my opinion that these are human beings, and I think the important aspect of this work is really trying to figure out what this means about our own ancestry. You know, you've mentioned several times that these have been found throughout the world, and that's absolutely true. And the real mystery is, why did they exist? What does this mean for the history of humankind and for the anthropological history and destiny of our race?
I interviewed a pilot several years ago who flew out a skeleton from Iraq and Afghanistan. Is it conceivable that some of these creatures, maybe I should even call them creatures if they were humans, are still around somewhere?
Well, in terms of North America, we know that from DNA tests and linguistic studies, we've been able to trace the descendants of the ancient giants in North America to existing Native American people. And a part of the project that I'm involved in right now involves tracking down the tall ones who are still with us today. And I can certainly tell you that there are still people born with these genetics today among the Native American population. And many of them are professional athletes, which isn't surprising. So, yes, to answer your question, there are still people of this heritage living in North America in the present era.
Could there be something evil about these giants, anything like that?
Well, that depends on which part of the world we're talking about and which group of giants.
Okay.
I think certainly, if we look at some of the Bronze and Copper Age giants from Western Europe and the ancient East. We even know that those individuals' DNA studies have shown that they may have originated in ancient Sumeria during the time of the Tower of Babel. So we may consider an evil influence in that realm, but in terms of the people who were living here in North America, since they are a distinct people, the answer to that question isn't quite as clear-cut. But as I said before, many of their societies were not hierarchical. These were more egalitarian-type societies.
What else are you working on these days, Jason?
Well, we're currently working on the follow-up to our first book, and it's going to reveal our own theory of the origins of these people and also trace them through time to living Native American tribes.
Would we be in shock when you get the results?
I think that a lot of people will be, actually. I know because it really surprised me. It's actually very surprising how much you can actually learn about these people, both their ancient ancestors and their modern descendants. I know that for many years, it seemed that there was a veil between us and the Tall Ones, that they existed on the other side of some impenetrable wall, and we couldn't really know anything about them. But the archaeological literature actually tells us a great deal, and we're also going to be getting into their mythology and cosmology a lot more in the future.
Was there a social status to these giants in terms of how they lived during any particular time period?
Well, the societies evolved over time. For example, around 1500 BC in the Great Lakes area, there were several regional centers which developed. And in these centers, there were people that variously are referred to as big men or aggrandizers by archaeologists. But what they really were individuals who controlled the economy, especially resources that people would need to survive, like the fishing industry. And these individuals actually oversaw marriage alliances and various other aspects of human life, and it had a remarkable impact upon the population. But then, around 1000 BC, the societies began to become more egalitarian. Interestingly enough, you mentioned Cahokia.
Mm-hmm.
During the age of Cahokia, we see the rise of elite chiefdoms that passed on their status to their descendants, and these individuals were sort of presenting themselves as the incarnation of a sun god. And there were many, many large skeletons found in the tombs of the elite Mississippians. So it changed over time. It sort of fluctuated, just like our society does today.
Is there going to be a dramatic epiphany about, these individuals, these tall ones? Will it ever become so public that everybody will know about it?
I think that what's going to occur is a lot of the more scholarly research that some people are doing is going to be entertained by a new generation of archaeologists who are probably going through the university circuits now. And these people will probably double-check some of the things that you and I are talking about tonight. And what we'll probably see is a gradual and very cautious acknowledgement of the reality behind this phenomenon.
If you could talk to one of these giants, what would you ask it?
Oh, wow. Well, there's a lot. There's a lot that I would ask it. I would want to know really the meaning of some of the artifacts that they're buried with, because the people in these cultures created some of the most remarkable copper and shell objects in the history of the world. In fact, North American copper miners in the Great Lakes by 6000 BC were creating advanced copper tools for hunting and fishing. And that really gave them a technological leg up on the rest of the world, because it would be another 3,000 years before any society in the ancient world was fabricating comparable tools. So I would be really interested in learning about their material culture, their cosmology, and their traditions.
All right, Jason, stay with us. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back and take phone calls with you next hour. Jason Jarrell with us, his book, Ages of the Giants, website paradigmcollision.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Fascinating. These stories of giants, Steve Quayle brought us many of these stories as well. Just very fascinating what happened on this planet a long, long time ago. Anyway, we'll be back in a moment. And the phone lines are now open.